This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning. You ready for the long weekend coming up? Well, we still have some work to do, you and I. We have 3 hours to spend together, and I can't wait. I'd love to hear from you. My number is 888-914-9149. It's the same number, but for those who may be new to the program, put it in your speed dial, 888-914-9149. Lines are open right now, and I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a question. Could be apologetics related. Maybe you, as I like to say, you might need a second opinion. Maybe there's a situation and you would be interested in another perspective on what you might do. Well, I'm here for you. And this is probably the best time of all to call because very few people have called in and the lines are relatively free right now. 888-914-9149. So we'll get people sorted out. First thing I'd like to do is to share with you some audio about parents around the country. This is courtesy of PragerU. They're around the country. These are snippets from various, for example, school board meetings, PTA meetings, in which parents are at the grassroots level, spontaneously all around the country, they are rising up and speaking out against the imposition of the critical race theory, which is just a revised version of Marxist class warfare theory. We've talked about that several times on the program. And rather than you hear from me again on this topic, which is very important because it's ever encroaching, they're very militant, they're very aggressive in how they are promoting this across academia and elsewhere. It's not just there. But I'd like you to hear from some of these parents. So this is a montage of several. Well, as soon as it's ready to play, we'll play it.
It's a poisonous worldview. It denies the individual, the content of their character, and the merit of their work.
How concerned should parents be about woke indoctrination and critical race theory in schools, and what can they do to fight against it?
How concerned they should be is extremely. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, 12. I say that with no reservation. It's a nightmare.
We are the freest country in the world. Everyone, blacks, Latinos, women, LGBTQ, all minorities have equal opportunity under the law to achieve their dreams. Why don't we teach that and inspire students to that?
You, in whom we've put our trust to instruct our children in math, science, and history, are instead indoctrinating our children with radical political ideology and rhetoric adapted from Karl Marx. These programs are aimed at turning our students against their parents. They're being taught to be ashamed of the United States, and that it's good to kneel during the national anthem. This works against the student's self-worth and identity by undermining their confidence. They can't speak their mind against such ideas for fear of retribution. Transgenderism and sexuality are not subjects for the classroom or library story hours. And mathematics is not racist, as some have claimed. In continuing this effort by the radical propaganda to dumb down our society in favor of emotional learning, you are helping to extinguish individual freedoms. And I say shame on you for not taking a stand against this communist agenda.
Equity sounds non-threatening and is easily confused with the principle of equality. Equality, as enshrined in our Declaration of Independence, is explicitly rejected by CRT backers that regard it as cover for white supremacy and oppression. Equity promotes equality of outcome, not equality of opportunity. Equity strives to segregate individuals by identity, particularly race, rather than ability, desire, and achievement.
The diversity instructors have been silencing your parental voice, driving a wedge between you and your child, all in the deceptive name of diversity and inclusion. Your role as an influential presence in your child's life has not been honored or revered. Scientific data is ignored. You are ignored. Do the research. Look at the study from Brown University entitled Parent Reports of Adolescents and Young Adults Proceed to Show Signs of a Rapid Onset of Gender Dysphoria. Read the findings of Abigail Schreier, who holds degrees from Columbia University, Oxford, and Yale Law School. There's a tremendous game of deception going on in our classrooms, and our children are losing their innocence.
Let's pause here for a second.
Their ability to trust parents.
Okay. So in case you're just tuning in right now, what we're hearing is just a few minutes worth of parents. You heard a mom. She's been talking most of the time. A dad was talking as well. And they're reacting negatively to the critical race theory that's being foisted upon children all across the country. Not a topic that we really even heard or talked about, say, a year or two ago, but now it's everywhere. And you've heard me talk about it. I've shared with you resources. And I wanted you to hear from a few other voices of people who are reacting to this problem. And I'm hopeful that if you have children in school or if you have grandchildren in school, that you'll be able to exert a positive influence in helping to defend them from this radical indoctrination under the guise of being anti-racist. That's the thing. This is like a mask. The mask is, oh, well, we're anti-racist. Who doesn't want to be anti-racist? I'm anti-racist. We all are anti-racist, or should be anyway, because racism is wrong. It's evil. But in fact, the nature of critical race theory, it devolves into a form of racism where it specifically stipulates that white people, for example, are inherently racist, that white people are inherently white supremacists, and they can't even see their own racism. And no matter what they do or say, no matter how much they try to, quote unquote, do the work, which is one of their favorite slogans, that they'll never be free from it. And that white people, by virtue of their skin, even down to little babies, are oppressors and supremacists, no matter what they may say. That's racism. When you single out a whole group of people on the basis of their skin color, doesn't matter what color it is, and then you label them with all of the, in this case, all of these epithets, that is a rank form of racism. It's an institutionalized form of racism because it's now gaining ground, not only in academia, but also in our government, our armed forces, for example. The federal government itself is being subjugated by this very aggressive ideology. So while there's still time to do something about it, it's worth your time to hear some of these parents who are speaking out on the issue. So we'll play another couple of minutes of this. This is courtesy of PragerU. Let's go.
And the freedom of being a child.
The words diversity and inclusion do not necessarily mean what people think they mean. Everyone would agree diversity and inclusion are valuable and important, but the devil is in the details. If you tell our ninth graders at Rocky River High School that society is made up of two separate groups, a dominant and a subordinate group, and the dominant group controls the subordinate group because of its unearned privilege, you are teaching critical race theory. Furthermore, if you identify the dominant group as the white middle class, you are teaching critical race theory. And I want to stop with the sugar-coated buzzwords. Let's go ahead and call them oppressors and victims. If you teach ninth graders that every person, including themselves, has to be understood in terms of a special social group, you're teaching them to see the world through a lens of group identity, be it race, socioeconomic status, gender, or ethnicity. Groupthink creates conflict. It pits one group of students against another. It's a poisonous worldview. It denies the individual the content of their character and the merit of their work. We are the freest country in the world. Everyone, blacks, Latinos, women, LGBTQ, all minorities have equal opportunity under the law to achieve their dreams. Why don't we teach that and inspire students to that? Let's teach our students to overcome obstacles. Of course, we want our students to be sensitive and respectful and caring and most of all kind. But surely our excellent Rocky River teachers and staff can foster these virtues without political indoctrination and rhetoric. Do we really need to write a check to the DCNEO for $72,000 to do this for us? And please, I'm ending. Finally, do your research, please. When you hear the words microaggression, unconscious bias, allyship, even social justice, please have a fair and balanced review of what they really need. There are two sides to these coins, and the devil is in the detail. Please stop teaching the dangerous politics of group identity.
Okay, that's good. And it continues in that same vein. Jim is going to get the link to that posted for you so you can check it out for yourself. Just as a reminder, the resource that I shared with you a week or two ago by Matthew Rufo is available. They're trying to, as you might expect, the critics of critical race theory are trying to impugn his character and suggest that he's a kook and such, but he's not. He has a resource for you. It's called Critical Race Theory Briefing Book, and it gives, as I was saying earlier, a lengthy series, in fact, of well-documented, meticulously footnoted quotes from the major sources of those who are proposing and propounding critical race theory. So it's not spin, it's not filtered through somebody's ideological lens. This is actually what they're saying. You need to know what they're saying. And he also has a lot here in terms of what you can do to speak against this and how you can speak against this. There's so much here that it would not be feasible for me to go through all of it, but it's available to you if you go to my Twitter feed. I'm going to bump that up to the top by retweeting it. It's a PDF. It's free. You don't have to pay anything for it, but it's well worth your time to have it on hand and be conversant in these issues. Now, a few other things I want to share with you before we go to the phone calls. Interestingly, and not surprisingly, this according to The Federalist, the nation's largest teachers union has voted to dig up dirt on organizations that oppose critical race theory, and it is racist, so I might as well call it that. So here's the article from The Federalist. The largest teachers union in the United States just voted to dig up dirt on organizations that oppose the implementation of racist critical race theory in their students' school curriculum. During the National Education Association's virtual representative assembly this week, the 3 million member teachers union adopted an amendment that funnels funds into researching anti-CRT organizations with hopes to poke holes in their attempts to remove racist teachings from government schools. NEA, now this is a quote from the resolution of the teachers union itself. NEA will research the organizations attacking educators. Notice how they frame it as attacking educators. We're not attacking anybody. We're defending against the attack of this blatant racist ideology that is masquerading as anti-racism. So no, you teachers are not being attacked. No, the schools and the administrators are not being attacked. Our children are being attacked. And the rest of us, by virtue of all of us living in the same society, we are being attacked. We are under attack by this pernicious ideology. So the teachers union are phrasing it exactly wrong, but this is what they're saying. So they say we're going to research these organizations who are, quote unquote, attacking educators already doing anti-racist work and or use the research already done and put together a list of resources and recommendations for state affiliates, locals, and individual educators to utilize when they are attacked, the newly adopted business item states. The union not only plans to share their findings with members throughout the NEA social media platforms, an article in the NEA Today and a recorded virtual presentation webinar, they're also going to continue to boost and encourage racist education in a time when overwhelmingly the majority of Americans oppose it. The attacks, and this is a quote from the NEA, the attacks on anti-racist teachers. And you notice what they're doing here. They're positioning themselves with the mantle of glory about them as if they were the anti-racists. And if you oppose them, then by virtue of that fact, you are necessarily a racist, right? Do you see the illogic there? I need to remind you, this is not anti-racism, no matter what they may call it. Like CNN said, this is an apple. Some people might say it's a banana. Some people might say over and over and over again, this is a banana, this is a banana. They may put it all in caps. This is a banana. You might even start to think that maybe this is a banana, but no, this is an apple. Please think about that when you encounter critical race theory and the people who are trying to promote it. It's a false narrative for them to say that they are anti-racist. This is a form of racism that they are wielding as a weapon now. Continuing. They claim the attacks on anti-racist teachers are increasing, coordinated by well-funded organizations such as the Heritage Foundation. We need to be better prepared to respond to these attacks so that our members can continue this important work. The policy, according to the Federalist, explains calling out Heritage's pledge to reject the racist tenets of critical race theory. To accomplish this goal of digging up dirt on anti-CRT campaigns and organizations, the union is demanding an additional $56,500 be added to their budget for the year. I think this may be into the millions. The NEA, which financially supports a bevy of candidates who are overwhelmingly Democrat, already devotes time, effort, and money to ensuring the spread of race-focused propaganda in government schools. The union not only proudly backs Black Lives Matter, but also encourages educators to sign a pledge to grow the movement for racial justice in education. And by the way, I'm all in favor of racial justice in education, but this ain't that. The union also champions its dedication to creating partnerships, quote, to build equitable systems, end quote, and provides links to dozens of resources on topics such as confronting white nationalism, anti-racist video primers, and implicit bias training to be used in and for classrooms. Under this new item, parents' efforts to push back against critical race theories, racist teachings around the nation in areas such as Loudoun County, Virginia, will soon face a new assault of big dollars and progressive agendas from the largest teachers' union. Woke teachers' unions have been put on notice that Americans will not stand for their racist CRT ideology, the Heritage Action Executive Director Jessica Anderson told the Federalist. She says now these same unions are funding a coordinated misinformation campaign to retaliate against those who are defending against critical race theory. But the American people, she says, will not be deterred, and their smear campaign will ultimately fail. Well, we can hope so, right? We can hope. There are no guarantees in life, that's for sure. So I think that should tell you something about the level of conflict that is arising here. And it, I think for many people, perhaps for you, it has kind of come out of nowhere. It has just appeared all of a sudden. Now, that's not, in fact, what has happened. It's been brewing for a long time, and it has been there for a long time. But the moment has arrived. I think that's how they look at this. The moment has arrived. Strike while the iron's hot. Hit while you can. And that's what's being done right now. So I urge you, please stay educated on this issue. Don't be buffaloed by it. Don't be afraid of the screamers on the left who are shouting their slogans and insisting that you're a racist just because of your skin color. If you're a racist, don't be a racist, whatever your skin color may be. But your skin color does not necessitate that you are a racist. Anyway, so these are things that we'll continue to bring to you as things warrant it, but I wanted you to be prepared and aware. I think we can get to at least one call before the break. Let's go to Ivan in Chicago. Is it Ivan or Ivan? How do you pronounce it?
Ivan, yeah. Okay. Ivan, fine.
Hi, Ivan.
Yeah, I have a question. It's a kind of a two-pronged question and a comment. So the question is, what is a good resource for just a quick primer on the intellectual underpinnings of communism, you know, the meanings of, like, dialectical mm-hmm. materialism and, like, mm-hmm. the bourgeoisie and the proletariat and that kind of stuff, and then also just how it has played out in history in various parts of the world? So that's okay. My one question.
Well, yeah. let's stop there. Okay, so the book that I would recommend is called The United States of Socialism. It's a new book by Dinesh D'Souza, very good book. And the subtitle points out what's behind it, why it's evil, how to stop it. So this is a book that looks at the kind of reconstituted version of socialism and eventually how it became communism in the Soviet Union and China and elsewhere. So there's not only the historical long view of the origins of this ideology, but also more closer to home, let's say, how it has played out in various countries, and take Venezuela, for example, how it utterly destroyed Venezuela, as it has in other countries. He also gets into some of the myths that people say, well, what about in Norway or what about in Sweden? They have socialism. They don't have socialism. That's not socialism. And so he picks this apart, does a very good job, and then he offers a plan of action for people just like you who want to know how to resist this kind of thing. Now, the second book I would suggest, that first one's called United States of Socialism. The second book is by Dr. Warren Carroll, And that book is called, I'll find the name of that book. I want to make sure I give you the correct one. But that's a history of the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. And it gets into not just the theory of Marx and Engels, but also how it was applied early on and how it changed. And that is very instructive as well, because not everything that's happening today is the same as it was then. But that would be another book that I would recommend. So what was your second question or the comment?
Yeah, my second question slash comment was, you kind of answered it when you talked about the CRT. Just mm-hmm. The reason I wanted to know those resources is to be able to draw parallels between CRT and kind of how it's like, you know, race-based Marxism.
Right.
And I feel like it's just another way. It's Marxism being applied to destroy society by using the categories of race.
Yeah, although I would differ with you in your analysis. It's not used to destroy society per se, although if it succeeds, it will destroy great sectors of society. Rather, it's a tool to control people through intimidation and fear. It's essentially a form of fascism, because fascism is neither left nor right. I think in the popular mind, most people associate it with the right. But fascism is the use of violence, often intimidation and other such tactics to silence your political opponents. So this is, ironically, a form of fascism. And I don't think they see it as something they will wield to destroy society, but they want to control society, which is what Marxists tend to do. I have time for your comment, and then I have to go to a break. Yvonne, what's that? Or Ivan?
Yeah, sure. My comment is I was reading about the history of the, I think it's, I'm going to jumble it a little bit, but it's the Rwandan genocide and kind mm-hmm. of the Tutsis and the Hutus and like mm-hmm. the kind of propaganda that they were spewing in order to get people really angry at the Tutsis. And it reminds me a lot of like what's going on right now with critical race theory. So just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, that's a valid thought. If you go back to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, he talks about, maybe I'll quote that when we come back from the break, about the techniques used to create that kind of a fear of the other and a hatred of the other. I've got to take a break. Thanks for the call, Ivan. Oh, by the way, the name of that book by Dr. Warren Carroll, the founder of Christendom College, is 1917, Red Banners, White Mantle. That is a very helpful book to understanding the underpinnings of the Bolshevik Revolution and what's going on now, for that matter. I'll be right back.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. I saw something great. A friend sent this to me. Use this sometime if you find yourself in a situation where you're arguing with somebody who's all in favor of men transitioning, quote unquote, into women and then dominating the women's sports categories and winning all the medals because the women can't compete against the men who claim to be women. Very often, if not almost always, the same people who hold views like that would also be A-OK with abortion. So Stefan Molyneux, a friend of mine, sent me this. I checked his Twitter account. He's actually suspended from Twitter, and it could be because of this, although this came out a couple of years ago. He says it's interesting that if you don't have a uterus, you can't have an opinion on women's issues, but you can compete in women's sports. I mean, that's brilliant. So memorize that and use that next time. It's interesting that if you don't have a uterus, you can't have an opinion, or so they say, on women's issues such as abortion, but you can compete in women's sports. It just lays bare the stupidity and the irrationality of that whole situation. 888-914-9149. We're going out to L.A. and talk to Sandra. Good morning, Sandra.
Sorry. Hi.
Hi.
So my question was, good morning, by the way. My question was, I'm really afraid to put my kids in school only because of, you know, because of the whole, I don't know, like I don't want to send my kid to school and he comes back and say, oh, mommy, like, today we met like a drag queen at school, or it's okay to dress up as a girl when I'm a boy. You know, so my question is...
How old are your kids, Sandra?
I'm 4 and 6, and my 6-year-old is autistic. So he basically, he's very visual, so anything he sees, he comes back and he says, oh, Mom, I did this today, or I saw this. Mm-hmm. But my question is, I honestly don't have the patience for homeschooling, but it seems like that's the only way that I'm going to keep my kids away from, I guess, demoralizing subjects. Mm-hmm. But, like, I want my kids to be able to, like, to, I guess, interact with society without, you know, taking away, like, the God factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right to have that concern. I would just remind you that, as it says in 1 John chapter 4, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. And if you maybe take those words to heart in terms of the challenge that you face with your kids, and don't be afraid of it. Be prepared to deal with it, and you can be obviously concerned, and you can feel a sense of maybe even nervousness, but don't be afraid of it in the strict sense, because ultimately you have the control over how your children are going to be raised. So let's talk about homeschooling for a minute. I understand that not everybody is cut out to homeschool. It's just how people are. Not everybody can do so well at it. But there are some resources I'd like to refer you to. And if you have a pen, jot these down, Sandra. So get in touch with Seton Home Study School. They're a homeschooling organization, national in scope, friends of the network. And they can give you advice, and they can guide you and show you how you might be able to do homeschooling by making use of their system and their curricula. They'll be more than happy, I'm sure, to give you suggestions on that. Then there's also Colby Academy, also friends of the network. You can look them up easily. They're a national organization, and they too can help you with your desire for more information about how to do homeschool. I mentioned before that Nancy and I had great success. We used Seton Home Study for many years with our children. And often what we would do is we would supplement and add, kind of mix and match some things. I think a lot of parents do that. And one additional resource that we found very helpful was called K-12. And K-12.com is their website. It's a national organization that provides a very good education that is recognized. It's accredited by all the states that it's in. And it was started by Bill Bennett, the former Secretary of Education. And it's a nice supplement. If let's say you wanted to go with Seton Home Study and you wanted to supplement with K-12. This is just an example. The nice thing about K-12 is that it provides all of the materials that you would need for free. And it will also plug your kids in with teachers and administrators, so it takes some of the burden off of you. But my advice, Sandra, would be start with Seton, start with Colby, get in touch with them, have them give you some advice, and then take a deep breath, chin up, and then do the right thing for your kids. Because you don't want to look back later, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and say, oh, if only I had tried it. If only I had tried homeschooling, if there's no good Catholic school available to you. You don't want to have regrets, right? So that would be my advice. Give it a test drive, and you might be surprised. It might be far easier than you imagine. And tell our friends at Seton Home School and Home Study, rather, and Colby Academy that Patrick sent you. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to...
It's not my first time calling, but my first time getting through it, and I've met you several times at the conference in Long Beach.
Great.
So, yes, both times with Immaculate Heart Mary.
Oh, right. Well, it's nice to be back in touch with you.
Yes. So my sister, I took her to Mary Star. And
you took her where?
To Mary Star to go to confession.
Okay.
Oh, let me turn on my phone. Okay, so I took her to Mary Star to go to confession, and they were saying that she has to be reinstated. She hasn't been to a Catholic. She hasn't been to Mass for years, but she's been to confession during that.
Okay.
What's the Ignatian exercise program?
Ignatian, yeah, that would be the spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius of Loyola.
Yes, so she did that at St. Peter Chanel.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me this, Marilyn, did the priest in the confessional tell her that she had to, what exactly was she told? I want to make sure I understand you.
So what happened was the priest left the confessional. She was sitting in the pew crying, and he went to another, waiting for another priest in the confessional. And he told her she had, came back, told her she can make the confession. She had to be reinstated to call them, make an appointment. And they're saying she might have to go through RSVA again, and she's had all her sacraments.
Hmm. Okay. Well, strictly speaking, that's not the case. It could be good advice, and maybe there was something that came up in her confession that prompted the good priest to offer her that advice. But it's not a requirement, especially if you are already a Catholic and you've already received your sacraments of initiation. So I take it she has been confirmed. She obviously was baptized and she received her first Holy Communion, even though she's been away for a while, right?
Yes, we were always Catholic.
Mm-hmm. So all that's... Oh, I'm sorry.
Mom was pregnant with me. No, my dad was converted when my mom was pregnant, so my dad really taught us the faith.
Ah, I see. Well, okay, so the bottom line is that anyone who is fully initiated into the Catholic Church can go to confession. Let's say in this case she's been away for 10 years. She can make a good sacramental confession, telling all of her serious sins since whenever the last time she made a good sacramental confession. And by the way, everybody, when I talk about a good sacramental confession, what I mean is that you didn't hold anything back. You didn't say, well, you know, I've got six mortal sins, but one of them I'm super embarrassed about, so I'm not going to mention that one. I'll tell five, but I'm not going to tell. No, that's not a good sacramental confession. In fact, it incurs another sin, the sin of sacrilege. So since the last time that she made a good sacramental confession, if she makes a good sacramental confession, all of that is wiped out, and she can begin resuming her sacramental life immediately. And there is no requirement, strictly speaking, that she go through a program in order to return to her Catholic faith. That would, in my view, be an unnecessary obstacle being placed in the way of her progress back to the house of the Father. Now, it may be very good advice. And so that may well be what the priest had in mind. He was giving her very good advice, and maybe it didn't come across to her quite that way. She thought he was saying, I'm not going to allow you back in unless you go to this RCIA. But she doesn't have to do that. She can start receiving the sacraments as soon as she makes that good sacramental confession. Maybe she's already done that. But in the interim, it might be very good for her to reimmerse herself in learning about her Catholic faith that she had walked away from, you see.
Okay. And then she's claiming that she's getting some voodoo against her, and I was trying to find out.
That who's using voodoo?
She's saying her family, her in-laws, are using voodoo against her. And so I'm trying to find out a priest that does exorcism.
All right. So you're in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. I'm assuming she lives in Long Beach, too. So you're in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. Contact the Archdiocese and ask to be put in touch with the exorcist for the Archdiocese. And they have a protocol for how to go about doing that. Every diocese has a priest who is assigned that duty as the exorcist. Have her meet with him, or at least initiate the process of being able to meet with him. And he will be in a position to determine, you know, is there something here that we need to be proactive about? And he can talk with her and counsel her. That would be my suggestion there. And do keep praying for your sister, Marilyn. Keep encouraging her. Keep praying for her. And maybe you can recommend that she listen to this program on Relevant Radio. It'd be a great way for her to grow in her faith on a daily basis. Thank you, Marilyn. Let's go to Jenny now in Arizona. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Patrick. Listening a lot to Relevant Radio, you get a lot of blessings from priest. At one time, I thought those didn't count. Is there a change, hopefully?
You mean when the priest offers you his priestly blessing over the radio?
Yeah, well, because at the end of a program, the host will say, Father, will you give our listeners a blessing? Mm-hmm. So the priest...
That works. Yeah, there's something special about being in the direct presence of a priest who's giving you the blessing. But think about Pope John Paul II, for example. I mean, he reigned for so long, and there's so many times when you would see him on television giving his blessing not only to the people assembled in the piazza down below, but also he was giving his blessing to everybody in the world. And that certainly can be done. So what I do, if I hear one of our priests on Relevant Radio offering his blessing, whether I'm driving or wherever I might be, I make the sign of the cross and I receive that blessing. The distance doesn't prevent that from helping you. So, yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, Jenny. Nice to talk to you. And that is the perfect time for us to step aside for a quick timeout. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. The number to dial, we just had a line open up, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Have you been pestered by robocalls? I have. I'm going to share with you 10 things that you can do. Actually, it's maybe even more than that, but several things, let's put it that way, that you can do to stop the robocalls. And it goes beyond just merely getting on that list. I'll share that with you when we come back from this quick timeout. You're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Have you ever watched any of those YouTube videos where a guy is scamming the scammers? There's one guy, he's hilarious. I just discovered him in the last 5 or 6 months, and he scams, like from India, the people who call, and they say that it's endless, the different varieties of scams that they have, but he scams them, and they're very funny if you need a little comic relief from time to time. But we all know what it's like. I'm sure you know what it's like to have all sorts of oddball phone calls coming in. Sometimes they don't identify the number. Sometimes they come from strange little towns around the country, and you're saying, I don't know anybody in Tucumcari, New Mexico. What are they calling me for? So these are all robocalls. And according to 10TV.com, Americans, that would be you and me, have lost an estimated $19.7 billion to phone scammers just in the last year. So they're offering tips on how you can stop the robocalls. So a nationwide investigation by TEGNA stations, T-E-G-N-A, stations across the country, including the one I just mentioned, found that robocalls are a national nuisance that plague our phone lines and have cost American consumers billions of dollars. Reining them in and tracking down those responsible is difficult for law enforcement, as many of the robocalling operations originate overseas. So what are you going to do? So They did a test where they purchased some new cell phones. This was the media conglomerate that was doing this investigative reporting. They purchased new cell phones all around the country. And the calls started coming into these new cell phones within hours of activating the phones. In some cases, the phones started receiving robocalls without ever calling or texting anyone. So the billions of robocalls and customer complaints still far outpace the relatively small number of law enforcement investigations aimed at stopping them. According to UMail, a website that tracks robocalling data and trends, the U.S. received 58 billion calls in 2019. While the calls did fall during the start of the coronavirus pandemic, they have risen again, and they've peaked at nearly 5 billion calls in March alone. So here are some tips. What can you do? Number one, you can sign up for that Federal Trade Commission Do Not Call Registry. I've done that. It doesn't work. Number two, don't answer robocalls. That's what I do. Don't answer them. If I don't recognize the number that shows up on my phone, I never, ever, ever answer it. It just goes to voicemail. Now, if I recognize it, I'll answer it. So if you're trying to call me and I know you, I'm going to answer your phone call. Otherwise, it goes to voicemail. Then what I do is when I see, usually they hang up or, you know, they leave some ridiculous message, you know, we're from the IRS or we're, you know, we're here to pay down your student debts or whatever. Then I just simply, because I have an iPhone, I think you can do the same thing on an Android, but you just swipe the thing, block this, or tap it, block this number, and then they can never call you again. It just goes to, you know, the trash can. Third tip, download a robocall blocking app. I did that too. That was hilarious fun, but I didn't spend enough time with it to get it, you know, kind of tricked out the way I wanted it to be. So I just deleted it and got my money back. I think it was like 99 cents. But there are some really, really funny and apparently very effective anti-robocalling apps that when the robocall comes in, the app will mess with the robocaller and it will waste all their time and they'll take you off the list. You don't have to block that call. They're going to say, don't call this number back. The next tip, write down who called, what time, the phone number, details about what they're representing. And then that rolls into the fifth tip, which is turn them into authorities. Since the advent of the robocall unit in March of 2020, the Ohio, for example, Ohio Attorney General's office has received more than 48,000 complaints in just the last couple of months and just in the state of Ohio. And that's just the people who bothered to call and complain. And we'll have a link to this article for you if you're troubled by the robocallers. 888-914-9149. We go now to Connie in Florida. Good morning, Connie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I need your help. My husband wants to change the words of Our Father when we say it. Mm-hmm. So instead of lead us not into temptation, he wants to say keep us from temptation. Now, my position is, you know, God gave us those words. It's in the Bible. We have to keep it the way it is. But he says, well, God wouldn't lead us in temptation. So that was just the interpretation was wrong.
Right. Well, this is a topic that has come up in recent months, well, the last year or two, in which even Pope Francis himself has advocated for changing that. And
wow.
Yeah. So I am with you on this issue. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, as far as I'm concerned. And it ain't broke. These are the words that are given by Jesus, and you can read them in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6. And they're clear in the English. It was clear in the Latin Vulgate that St. Jerome had translated the Greek from, and it's clear in the Greek. I mean, it says, lead us not into temptation. So although I understand that it seems incongruous to say, why, how would God do that? I mean, it says in the Bible that God has done that. It says it. So it's in Matthew chapter 4, in verse 1, it says, then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. So God, the Holy Spirit, led Jesus into temptation. And there's no getting around that. So If we consider the fact that the meaning of lead us not into temptation does not suggest, it doesn't mean that God is, you know, wanting to see, what's he going to do? How's he going to, because God knows everything. It's not as though God is waiting to see what you will do when you're faced with temptation, because he already knows. Nor is it the case, as some might imagine, that God wants you to fall into sin, so he's intentionally putting you into a situation where you're going to be tempted and fall into sin. He doesn't want that for you either. But rather, in his providence, God's loving plan for our happiness and ultimately for our salvation, in his providence, there are some twists and turns in life. You know it. I know it. We've all been there. In which the path of God's providence leads you into situations where you find yourself tempted. And the goal, of course, is to come through the temptation and not succumb to it. But on the face of it, there's no question but that God, at least in this one example that we have in Matthew chapter 4, he did lead Jesus into the wilderness to be tempted. So my thought is, as I said a minute ago, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, if it's injurious to your husband's faith life, if he for some reason just can't get past that and it makes him feel like God is wanting him to fall or wanting him to be tempted or somehow that's not compatible with an all-loving God, You can share those things with him, but my thinking is that if somebody is just completely distracted or bothered by this, then God knows your heart, and if you're going to change it to say it a slightly different way, that's okay. I don't think it's necessary. I'll leave it at that. I don't think it's necessary, but rather if somebody finds it a stumbling block, in that case, I would just, okay, honey, if that's what you want to do, okay, great. But I'm going to continue to say it the tried and true way.
I appreciate that. That's awesome.
Okay. Well, I'm here to help, Connie. 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All I ask for you is just give me 3 hours of your time every day. That's all. Is that too much to ask? Thanks for the call, Connie. I appreciate it. How about Riley now, listening in Texas? Good morning, Riley.
Howdy, sir. How you doing today?
I am well. Thank you.
Well, it's funny that I'm next because we were talking about issues that you can't get past and stumbling blocks. So I'm a college senior, and the concept for me that I really struggle with is that of hell, because I grew up super Catholic, and then when I got to college, I started thinking for myself, and I just really couldn't reconcile the concept of an all-loving, all-merciful God with, you know, what we're traditionally taught about hell, about how it's eternal fire and torment. And to me, it just doesn't line up that God would punish us infinitely for finite sins, to the point where I'm starting to look at other interpretations, such as like conditional immortality, where, you know, by being righteous, you gain immortality, but otherwise your soul is destroyed in hell. So I was wondering, two questions. One, is the concept of hell as eternal torment the one I should believe is true if I want to be Catholic and Christian? And second, if so, how is that concept consistent or right and just with, you know, with the character of an all-loving and all-merciful God?
Okay. Yeah, I hear your question loud and clear. So yes to the first question, and as to the second question, how is it consistent? Well, don't forget that God is all-loving, but he's also all-just, and he doesn't owe you or me salvation. It's a free gift that he deigns to give us, but we're free to refuse it. I mean, you have free will. You've turned away from, I presume, your Catholic faith, or at least you turned away from this tenet of the Catholic faith, which is a dogma of the faith that hell exists. I mean, that's your prerogative. You have the freedom to do that. And because, Riley, God created you out of love and for love, the only way that you can respond to his love is if you have freedom to do so. If you don't have freedom, it's not love on your part. It's coercion. You become an algorithm or a robot or something, but you're not freely human in responding if you're not, if you don't have the free will to do so. So the free will component of this dilemma is that the risk is there that the all-loving God who wants nothing more than your eternal happiness will, if you refuse it, he will give you justice instead. I'd rather have mercy personally, but God is not only merciful, but he's also just. So in his justice, if you say no, he's going to give you what you deserve. And what you deserve is what you want. And if you don't want him, if you don't want to be with him in heaven, then you get what you asked for, which will be eternal separation in hell. And that leads, I think, to the other part of your question, which is how can an eternal punishment be congruent or appropriate for a finite sin? And that's, of course, true if you look at it from that end of the telescope, because there's no sin that you and I can commit that's infinite in gravity, because we're not God. Only God is infinite and unlimited in all of his perfections. So the sin itself, if you want to quantify it, it certainly is finite, no question about that. But look at it from the other end of the telescope. The reason that that punishment is eternal, and there are two fundamental reasons. One is because the person you're offending is infinite. So your sins against God, who is infinite, take on a far graver proportion than they would if you simply did something mean to me. I mean, who cares if you do something mean to me? I'm just a guy with a microphone, whatever. But when you sin against God, who is infinite and who wants nothing more than for you to be happy, then it takes on a character far graver. The second reason, and then I'll throw it back to you, Riley, the second reason is because in this life we exist in time and our decisions are malleable. You can repent, you can change your mind, you can fall into sin, you can repent again. This is the time where we're moving through time in a procession of moments and things change. When this life ends and you move from time into eternity, it's an analogy I find helpful is like drying cement. When the cement is still wet, which is like this life right now, you have the ability to make handprints or etch the date in with a stick or something like that. But when the concrete, the cement hardens, you can press on it all you want with your hands and you're not going to be able to put a handprint on it anymore because it has now dried and it's hard and it can't receive the imprint of your hand. Well, in a similar sort of way, eternity is like that. So when you go into eternity, your final decision, is that your final answer, so to speak? That's what you're left with. And if your final answer in this life is yes to God, then you'll be happy with him forever in heaven. If it's no, then he'll say, okay, thy will be done. Now, Riley, I suspect you have more to say. So if you don't mind, hang on the line. And when I come back, I'll go straight back to you and we can extend the discussion a little bit further if you want. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app, and I'll be right back.
I donate now, and actually, every chance I get, I send people the link to the app.
I'll tell you, it's changed my prayer life.
That
is beautiful. It really has. I'm so grateful to all of you.
Make a tax-deductible donation at relevantradio.com.